What's going on, guys? Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. This would have been the appropriate ho ho ho. Welcome back to the number one sports podcast in the Southeast Michigan region, the Holiday Edition, filming on Christmas Eve morning. I'm your host, Connor, the C of CMV, and I'm here on this fine holiday. I had this argument yesterday that I almost like Christmas Eve more than Christmas. And I have a weird reason for it. But then my dad was like, well, you don't have Christmas Eve isn't even a thing without Christmas. So how could it be better? But anyways, I'm here on Christmas Eve with Vladdy, the V of CNV. What's going on, man?
Not much. Haven't started packing for Bulgaria. Leave here in 3 hours. So, classic Vladdy stuff where procrastinating and the age-old saying, if you leave something for the last minute, it'll only take you a minute to do. So,
I like that. I haven't heard that
yeah,
before.
I guess it's not an age-old saying. Maybe it'll be my new catchphrase going forward. But nothing really special. Just kind of killing some time and ready to go back to Bulgaria for the first time in 2 years. So I am really excited for that.
Nice, nice. Yeah, it's the packing thing. Like, I hate saying this because I know it's like part of like you and I are two like mid-20s males that don't really need much material
There
wise
you
to
go.
live. But like I've always kind of felt like the packing thing is so overblown that like you're going away for 6 days. You need 6 days worth of things. You know what entertains you on a daily basis as far as like gadgets and stuff that you need. Like it shouldn't take you shouldn't need to do it days in advance or it take hours to pack. Like I've never understood that. And I know that's coming from a very simplistic biased mindset, but I'm the same way in that like I need my 20 minutes. Like maybe for a long trip like that, I understand taking maybe longer than that, but I don't know.
No,
That's my rant on packing.
I'm totally with you. It should not be that hard for people. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. Like you said, throw the underwear, throw the clothes, get an idea of where you're going and what the weather's going to be like, and have a couple pairs of pants and sweatshirts if it'll be cold, and a couple of shorts and t-shirts if it won't be. It should not be hard, but yeah. How
Yeah,
are you?
I'm good. It's the holiday season, so a couple days off, and then we'll get right back to it. But yeah, I don't know. It's fun. It's a nice recharge your batteries holiday. It's funny because Christmas just it's so it's almost it's not better, but like it's just as fun in a different way now that we're adults, if you want to call me an adult. And it's still just as good, but for different reasons. So that's it. We got a packed show for you. We've got the NFL as usual, college football. We had the playoff. Well, even since we probably won't have an episode for you next week, given the holiday and Vladdy's travels across the pond, we'll preview next week's college football games as far as the playoff goes. We'll briefly touch on some others mixed bag sports, specifically Michigan State basketball and the Detroit Hockey Red Wings. And then that's it. That's all we got. So, where do you want to start? Should we take care of the mixed bag stuff?
Let's kick the Michigan State basketball and Red Wing stuff out real quick.
Yeah, well, okay, kick it out. I thought you meant kick it to the back, but
No. Let's get it out.
Michigan State, not too much to say this week. Quiet. I know Izzo's always kind of let the guys go home for the holidays, but this seems like I'm almost a little worried at how little they've played over the last month of December. They're only really going to play three games in a little over 3 weeks, going into Big Ten, full-time Big Ten play. Since we last talked, a home win against FAU, some struggles with rebounding the ball in the first half, second half. Cohen Carr has kind of his legacy game, 17 points, career high.
First career triple.
First career triple, which is a crazy stat to say. I know he didn't have too much of an impact on last year's team. But not really much to change. It was a good performance. Whenever the walk-ons get in, you probably played pretty well. So I don't have much to add on that performance unless
I
you
guess
do.
the only thing I'll say is with the holiday break, hopefully Jeremy Fear stays away from the bars of Joliet.
I had a
Stay
similar
home,
thought.
Jeremy. Don't do anything stupid. Don't do anything like last year. We need you. Please don't get shot again.
I would consider keeping 1855 open for Jeremy Fears over the holidays. We'll just
I
uh, Yeah, they're gonna only play, they'll play a 3-6 Western team on the 30th, and then it's right into Big Ten play, which they have a relatively easy January, and then it's a gauntlet in February. So we'll be here and we'll have much more coverage during those weeks, especially as football starts to die out. And the Red Wings lose again last night, 4-0. That's three in a row. I said they were kind of rolling a little bit. They had a nice, I think. They got 5 out of 6 points in three games. And I said they're about five wins away from me being back in and watching them consistently. And what do? They have a back-to-back against Montreal, who theoretically should be one of the only teams worse than you at this point. And you blow a third period lead Friday night at home, and then you get absolutely mollywhopped 5-1 Saturday night in Montreal. And then again on home ice last night against an average Blues team, I'll say. You lose 4-0, get shut out, get booed off the ice by the Detroit Red Wings fans, and it's as far as this season goes, you're second to last in the East. I think you're fourth or fifth last in the league right now. It's tank for Hagans, the BC kid at this time, and I think we talked about it Saturday. Is there a generational talent? I think this kid is a very good, like, there's a reason why he's going first overall. But he's not even a true consensus number one, which it's the year after that there's a true consensus number one right now. So just the Red Wings luck that when it seems like we're going to be a lottery team this year, there's not a true consensus number one, which could be a good and a bad thing. But anyways, I kind of got my frustrations out on you before we hopped on air, and now I like don't have as much to say, but they're bad. They play lifeless. It's just an odd mix. And I know Simon Edvinson's out. Ben Chiarot was out yesterday. It's just an odd mix of veteran guys that are past their prime and don't have much life, like Gustavsson, Patrick Kane, Vladimir Tarasenko, and younger guys that haven't really fit into their role yet. I know we've liked what Edvinson's done this year, but as far as being a first pairing defenseman, not what you want as a 21-year-old, in his first rookie season. Same with Marco Casper. He's looked showed flashes, but hasn't necessarily and has shown flashes that like he's there and should be kept on the roster, but isn't quite in the role you pictured him to be. And it's a weird time because there is a ton of prospects, but this is year six of Yzerman, and this is arguably the third worst roster he's put out in year six. And it's weird because and we've talked about this with Brad Holmes in terms of how he hasn't necessarily traded well, although you could argue this year that's changed a little bit by some of the moves he's made to address Hutchinson's injury. But this guy has given out bad free agent contracts, has made bad trades. He gave away a second round pick just for the Sharks to take Jake Walman's contract this offseason. And what does he do? On the worst team in hockey, he's ninth in defenseman in points right now. So that's a guy you probably would have liked to have now that two of your top three defensemen aren't out and you're playing Jeff Petrie and Justin Hall every night right now, who don't belong on an AHL roster, let alone an NHL roster, playing 15 plus minutes a night for you right now. It's just every single contract he's given out. What I'll say to this is he hasn't given out term, and really, like, the only one that's truly bad in terms of term and money right now is JT Compher, who I believe is on the second year of a 5-year contract, not making a ton of money, but for a guy that's playing third line center to be making over $5 million right now is extremely frustrating. He hasn't made good contracts. He hasn't been good in free agency. He's refused to kind of give term, and you're hoping that's just to not take away spots from these young guys because there's a ton of potential prospect wise. All of his first round picks have looked and showed promise right now, but he hasn't hit in the middle rounds. And until he does, we're just going to be twiddling our thumbs, waiting forever for this to work out. So that's my Red Wings rant for the today in shambles. What's new with Detroit sports?
Yeah, nothing to add to that.
All right, let's get into the nitty gritty college football. I guess Vladdy's got me in check right now. Not quite checkmate because I think there's more to be said for this. But in terms of our battle in is the 12-team playoff good or bad? Because you had four non-conference I'll say four non-close games, only one that was even competitive, if you want to call it that. We'll start from the top. Notre Dame, Indiana, Notre Dame 27, Indiana 17.
And that's a fake 17.
It's a fake 17. They scored those, against the Notre Dame backups in the last couple minutes.
Yep, and needed an onside recovery, so.
And onside recovery. I'll say this, that was the Notre Dame atmosphere. That was probably the best home atmosphere. I know it was the night game, and I maybe we can go in, we'll get into Ohio State when it's time, but I was the most impressed by that atmosphere. Maybe it was because it was the first game too, and I was just like, oh wow, we have home playoff games right now. But Notre Dame showed out from a fan perspective. It was cold. All four of the games besides the Texas game, or three of the four games, were cold. And Notre Dame, and I don't know how much of this is Indiana, and we can get into Indiana and SMU versus the SEC teams, but Notre Dame is for real. They're going to be for real. They owned the line of scrimmage. They had pressure on Rourke all day, who looked awful. And Riley Leonard showed flashes, at least, that he is a veteran that can kind of piece his way through a game.
Yep. That was just a talent gap, a physicality gap, an athletic gap. There was kind of the Indiana thing of they need their running game to get going to open up the passing game for Curtis Rourke. And if they can't do it, if they get into the obvious passing situations that Ohio State and even Michigan to an extent were able to put them in, they do not look like the same team that kicks the shit out of everybody. Like we saw for 12 week or 11 weeks, I guess. That's what happened. They kind of fell behind early, could get nothing going in the run game just because, again, not big enough, not strong enough to even compete in the trenches with Notre Dame, and
Wow.
they got killed. With that said, I was thoroughly impressed with the Notre Dame defense, and we'll kind of get into their hypothetical matchup with Georgia later, but I think they have a very real shot in that game.
Yeah, I agree. Is that it for that one? We want to move
Yeah,
on.
I
I
mean,
don't
I
want
guess like the only I do have another thing specifically about that game, but I have it segmented into something else that I'll get to once we're done recapping the actual games.
Yeah, the recaps themselves could be short because, I mean, there weren't a lot of, even I'll admit, there weren't a lot of highlight reel game moments to analyze. Next game was arguably the worst, and I don't, yeah, Ohio State, but Penn State 38, SMU 10, the whiteout. SMU just looked cold the entire night. Like, I know they were in a miserable state. That quarterback's. They made him look like he was playing JV football. Two pick sixes, I believe, in the first quarter. And then Penn State, who, early, it's so funny because SMU, Penn State goes three and out to start. SMU drives the ball down, has a fourth and one or two. And instead of taking the easy run down to get the yards, he tries to put it in the end zone, guys wide open. Penn State corner makes a play, pops the ball out, incomplete pass, turnover. Penn State punts again, basically goes three and out, and then SMU throws two pick sixes in a row, essentially. And then once you had that 14-0 lead, you start to notice Penn State's offensive line, and I'll get to the defensive line dominated all day. Abdul Carter, the rest of the gang had an absolute day. They couldn't run the ball, which is clearly what they wanted to do with a running quarterback. They wanted to try to get into read options to open up some RPOs, and they just were never able to do that. And that's my big takeaway with all these games is the disparity between teams in the trenches. And this was arguably the biggest one, because once those two pick sixes happened, like Penn State's offensive line started to work, and Drew Aller like didn't have the greatest day slinging the ball around, but he was able to get out. And like plenty of time, guys weren't open. He was able to scramble. They ran the ball with very effectively. Singleton and Allen both had over 50 yards. So, and again, there's not much else because once the defense helped them out, Penn State's offense unlocked and kind of had their way with it. And this game was never really close.
I guess on the Drew Aller front, he didn't have to throw much. Whether part of that was the gusting winds, and part of it was just, yeah, the run game started, and then once it did, why continue? But I was impressed kind of with his scrambling ability, kept some plays alive, was able to take off. So guess good for him. And I think I said this to you when we were watching the game together, but Carson Beck is done for the year, and I think Penn State's playing for a national championship.
It's been like we'll see. It's as everyone says, the James Franklin effect, and he early on like going for it on fourth and like 12 or whatever it
17,
was.
yeah.
He had a couple of moments where he tried to throw up on himself, but unfortunately for him, his team was much better than their opponent. I know that was a crazy win because you saw the Penn State guy barely make a 40-yarder, and then the SMU guy come up short on a 42-yarder. So clearly, that was a factor that won't be a factor moving forward now that
Nope.
they're into the actual bowl games in nicer climates and or inside.
Completely agree.
The next one, the only one that like had a chance at being fun, Clemson 24, Texas 38. I mean, Clemson early on goes down, looks awesome. We're like, is this going to be a game? And then it just kind of felt like defensively, Clemson never had an answer for Texas. And while Cade Klubnik, I'm going to give him credit here, was better and played better than I ever was going to give him credit for, it just wasn't enough because they weren't able to get the stops defensively.
I think you mentioned this was some this I call this the fake competitive game, because at no point after the 10-minute mark of the second quarter did Clemson have the ball with a chance to tie or take the lead. They were always down 2 scores. And again, kudos to them. Texas has a great defense. They were able to move the ball. They got some scores. It's just never got the score on the other side, or never got the stop on the other side to make it a game. And so, yeah, I guess this was like half a competitive game. It was closer than the rest, but Texas moves on, and they were just way too down at that. Run game was incredible. Jaden Blue and the Quintravion Weisner, I don't know how you, that's how you say his last or first name, but those guys were maniacs. I think they each had 2 touchdowns, if I'm not mistaken. But
I don't know if it's the Bijan effect, but they more than I'm going to say more than any team not named Oregon or Ohio State seem to have the best skill depth at skill positions.
yeah, they got the we I may I know I made a joke with you as well. They got the three receivers who share like 5 letters of names: Golden, Bolden, and Bond.
It's like if you played Word Hunt or like Word Scramble on the iPhone and they
Oh
give
yeah,
you
you
five
start.
letters,
Yeah,
those were the 5 words you would make. That's how Texas receivers.
those guys are fun. But yeah, nothing more for me on this game. Like you said, the actual recaps of these are kind of whatever. The night game on Saturday: Tennessee, Ohio State. Bloody murder. This was supposed to be the closest of the four games and the seeds, and in my opinion, I actually think it was the worst. I do think it was worse than Penn State SMU, because at least on the SMU front, you had quarterback mistakes that killed you. Tennessee just flat out couldn't do anything. They were totally overmatched. At least, like we said, SMU was able to drive the ball a couple of times at the beginning, so is what it is. I mean, I'll give some credit to the Tennessee fans. They talked a big game, and I think they showed up with probably 25, maybe 30,000 fans, and all of them were gone by the third quarter. Then they took over the roads leaving the shoe. So that some stuff there, but it was Ohio State all night, I guess. The run game, Travion Henderson specifically, was phenomenal. The downfield passing game was phenomenal. It's crazy what happens when your head coach is not locked into this mental battle with himself, having to prove something that doesn't exist with this magical chip on his shoulder against Michigan. I don't understand how we saw more downfield passes on the first drive than they tried at all in the Michigan game. But when you have NFL receivers, throwing to the NFL receivers is usually a good plan. And we saw Jeremiah Smith dominate at all levels. Wasn't just over the top. We saw Emeka Ekwuka dominate at all levels, and they moved the ball.
Which is like it was most impressive to me because that was kind of the matchup people were worried about was Ohio State's offensive line against what was considered a pretty good front seven for Tennessee. And like you said, they kind of were able to get Smith out wide, which is something that they didn't do against Michigan. And then that opens up the once you spread it out, that opens up the deep ball, that opens up the run game, and was no longer a problem. I go back to the trenches thing is this was one of the more impressive trenches battles for a team that has all this talent around the roster, but people don't talk about their in the trenches game, so to speak, is that they dominated the trenches. The offensive line that's been injured came to play. The defensive line, I'm not going to be able to say, I am Elva, Nico,
Yamaliava.
yeah, Nico, we'll say, was running for his life the entire game, and he took some shots.
He was it was interesting. He didn't really protect himself. It was
No.
kind of a just he almost looked like a running back at times. You mentioned the defensive line. I think that might be Jack Sawyer and JT Tuiamamolo's best game in a big moment, which not a lot of other sample sizes. So like if like good for them, they actually made some plays, but that's what they're supposed to be. Because they I know these guys are both some super hyped up recruits. Every year they get talked about like the ghosts of the Bosa brothers in a Chase Young, and they never actually do anything. At least they were making plays. Starters were pulled by the fourth quarter, so there's not really much more to say than that.
Yeah, when you had, I believe, three of the four games had starters pulled in the fourth quarter, it wasn't a good day for the losing squads. Where do you want to go from
I
here?
was going to say, so just overall, I know you kind of made the joke about how I have you in check. I'm actually not even going to try the whole I told you so because it's a 1 year sample size and it's with a flawed system because like we'll talk about that as well. But I think and I think I can kind of speak for you here and is I think you at least saw my argument and my viewpoint on this topic of there's just not 12 teams good enough to compete for national championship. There isn't in football. This isn't like March Madness where a team can get hot and be a five seed and go run the table. That doesn't happen in football that way. And that's really, I guess, all I can ask for is you at least understanding my viewpoint where maybe 2 weeks ago when we would kind of butt heads, it's like, well, look at this idiot. I think now that we at least saw some of the fruition of the games, it's like, all right, well, maybe 12 is okay, but maybe that these are just filler teams. And that's where I've like, why have filler teams?
Yeah, I agree. The March Madness point is so good because I knew that in the back of my mind that like, yeah, this is like it's not the same. And you like college basketball, like we'll get into to later in like 2025 is like it's a gong show right now. Is that like everybody plays everybody, everybody beats everybody, and you're seeing it already in November and December that there's like it's anyone's game. It's whoever gets hot. And I knew that that wasn't going to be the case with the football playoffs, but I to actually see it like you said, put some words into my mouth, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah, next thing though, and this is kind of where I got a little frustrated with some of the talking heads. It's this has turned, I've said this before to friends, I've said this before on this podcast. This is turning into the two-party American political system. You have Fox and the Big Ten against ESPN and the SEC, and you have all their talking heads just get up there on in front of the camera and say dumb shit. And that's highlighted by Kirk Herbstreit himself. When Indiana gets killed by Notre Dame, every ESPN talking head screaming. Oh my God, they got outclassed. Like, I mean, you had Kirk delivering a monologue. You would have thought he just killed like some kind of terrorist overseas. He's out there delivering this passionate speech and this fanatical cultivizing like words. Indiana was outclassed. The wins, the losses, this, they're bad. No talent, none of this. And it's like, Kirk, why don't you talk about Tennessee getting outclassed 24 hours later? Where's your monologue there?
Well, you know why is because he wants to. He also like he had an interesting week and like he does a relatively good job of not making his Ohio State bias come out. But like that with like the calling out First Take too. Like, A, you see Shannon Sharpe's reaction to that? I just saw it this morning.
I did.
What an absolute like he screams bully on the playground that goes home and just cries himself to sleep every night. Like how insecure, but for being a Hall of Fame tight end, is he in his media life? He's so I can't stand him,
Yeah, but
and
I mean,
he's
you
probably
had.
gonna make a statement about how like I talked about a show now, but where was I at? Oh, the Kirk Herbstreit stuff. But yeah, I thought like so. Then he goes on this long thing about Ryan Day. Everyone counted him out. So like he was a little all over the place this week,
Well, yeah,
and
and then,
not in
I
a good way.
mean, Lane Kiffin. How come Lane Kiffin's Wi-Fi apparently stopped working Saturday night? Lane Kiffin loved tweeting Friday night and Saturday morning. What happened? Where'd the Wi-Fi go Saturday night, Lane? You still haven't tweeted. Neither is Paul Feinbaum. Hey, Paul, where's your Wi-Fi at? I don't like how this is turning into a bunch of people. I don't even know if, like, I understand you always want to push for your guys to get a chance, but what are we doing here? Like, this. It was stupid. And obviously, with the timing of the games, Indiana got killed first and then SMU got killed. So, like, the SEC fanboys kind of got their, like, 24 hours of, like, let's push our narratives. And thankfully, Ohio State just beat the shit out of Tennessee. And then suddenly everyone started turning around and making the jokes back at the SEC people. And it's like, if this is what we're going to turn into, like, it gets annoying. It gets frustrating.
And I think like above all else, what I took away is you have an example in the Big Ten in Indiana and in the SEC in Tennessee is that, and that's kind of the point I've seen that I agree with. It shouldn't just be like it's going to go across the board in these super conferences. Is you can now be the beneficiary Tennessee was, and so was Indiana, of not really having to play anybody in your conference because they're just so large with this the way the schedules are going to work now. Where this is probably always going to happen, and it's not a Big Ten or an SEC thing. It's like you said, a super conference thing, and that you've made these super conferences, and that's the byproduct of it.
Yeah, I guess my fear for next season, I am afraid that these poor performances from Indiana and SMU specifically, I think the SEC kind of talking heads might prevail. And I think next year you might see a 9-3 SEC school get in over an 11-1 team. And if that happens, I'll really lose my mind because at that point, why do we play the games? Because it's like you had the whole Alabama thing. Oh, well, Alabama, the X, Y, and Z. It's like, well, Alabama lost to 2 6-6 teams. Like, I understand Alabama's got more talent than Indiana does, but if this talent's so good, don't lose to 6-6 teams. And I guess I won't go too far into this hypothetical scenario I'm creating in my head, but I have a little bit of an issue where I think we might kind of lose cabin pressure even more next year. And at that point, why not just let Vegas come up with the 12 betting favorites in August? Then you can combine that with ESPN's FPI 12 favorite teams. And then you can combine that with the 24/7 sports talent rankings. And then pick your 12 best teams using that formula and don't even play games. Let's just go straight to the playoff. Fuck it. Why not? But.
Moving forward, quick preview of the four games that are going to happen over New Year's weekend, or it's not really the weekend, it's during the middle of the week. First game, Wednesday, 1 o'clock, or sorry, the first game is New Year's Eve at 7:30. I complimented the way they did last weekend. Like the one, I guess they're kind of doing the same thing, but I would maybe throw more games on New Year's Eve. That's just my. Anyways, Penn State, Boise State, the Fiesta Bowl. Penn State 11-point favorites. It's this biggest storyline I think you can have. Genty versus, I know they played Oregon, but a real front seven. Who will prevail? I'm gonna say it's gonna be. I think this game is gonna be exactly what I said SMU and Penn State would be last weekend. And that I think Penn State's just going to have no problems going down the field and keeping the ball out of Genty's hands to where this will be kind of that 2-1 score game thing, where like Boise State is able to somewhat hang around but never truly make it a game. And I just think, yeah, I guess that's my simplistic review is that Penn State is just going to be able to, against the Boise State Mountain West defense, hang on to the ball and keep it out of Genty's hands to where he's not going to be able to beat them.
Completely agree. There's also the flip side of if Penn State goes up two scores quickly or three scores quickly, you've
What
even
are you
if
going to
Genty's
do?
on the field, you've taken the ball out of his hands because they need to pass. And I do not think Maddox Mattson and the collection of average college players that Boise State has at the skill positions can move the ball on Penn State. I don't think they're going to be able to hold up against I was about to say Adisa Isaac, dear Lord, against an Abdul Carter. And yeah, I think Penn State wins this game. I guess the only thing that maybe if you want to make a little bit of a joke is Boise State does have some juju in the Fiesta Bowl. I think they're 3-0 all time. So you don't want to come up against that buzzsaw, but yeah. Give me Penn State.
There and I and we'll see how much of a factor this is with the teams that got a bye is, and I know they get a long break for the bowl games, but this is the like, and this is
A month
assuming
off.
Penn State stayed healthy. This is a long time off versus a team that's like the teams that are basically in their normal schedule, like it's a normal season you played last week. So that's something I'll look for in all four of these games.
Next game, I think, is Texas, Arizona State.
Yep. Texas is a 14-point favorite.
Yikes. Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure what to say other than I expect Texas to kill them. I think this will be the exact same thing as kind of an Indiana and SMU, where I don't think Arizona State will have the physicality, the speed, the talent to compete with this Texas team. I know Sam Levitt is playing out of his mind, and his look is kind of had the whole first round prospect thrown around. He's got Heisman odds for next season thrown at him. But right now, I just don't think that'll be enough to kind of compete with this Texas kind of just behemoth in the trenches.
Yeah, I don't like see how this game can even be close personally. I don't have anything to add really. Like, where's the game? Like, which bowl game is this? Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, where's that? Florida?
Oh, I think so.
So not even, I was kind of hoping for like they got the Arizona one maybe and had a home, would have home field advantage, but even then it's like Texas is going to travel no matter where
Oh
just
yeah.
fan base.
Yeah, and then Georgia, I'm sure, is taking the Sugar Bowl. I don't even know if that's one of them, but I'd
I think
assume.
they tried to avoid that.
What do you mean? I
No,
thought they
they have, you're right. They have the Sugar Bowl.
I mean, they try and give the it's kind of like before with the playoff where the higher seeds get the bowls that are historically relevant slash closer to them. That's why Oregon's at the Rose Bowl as the
Bowl,
one
yeah.
seed. But yeah, the next game, Notre Dame, Georgia. Or I guess I think OSU Oregon. I think Notre Dame, Georgia is the last one.
Correct.
I'm gonna make a
Ohio
crazy
State -2.5.
I'm gonna make a crazy claim here. This is kind of the unofficial national championship, in my opinion. I know I'm higher on OSU than most people are. I know I've been accused by certain listeners of being a closeted Buckeye fan before, but Georgia has no quarterback. Carson Beck has officially kind of been shut down, and they're going the surgery route for him, so he's done. They lose their starting quarterback. I think these are the two best teams that are left. So I guess.
I wouldn't have said, I would have not agreed with you if Saturday didn't happen.
Fair enough.
I'm agreeing with you.
Fair. Okay.
I like it's also like these two played such a great game back
Oh,
in
yeah.
October.
That game was so much fun. The Dan Lanning intentional 12 men on the field, the kill clock, the back and forth. That was kind of one of the games of the year between, again, like you said, the two best and what I think are the best teams that are left now. So should be fun. I will be awake in Bulgaria at like 3 in the morning watching this game. It's actually right before we leave to come back, so that should be fun. But
I'll
I'm
be up
very
too at
excited for it.
5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to watch.
Did you say 5 p.m. Eastern Standard?
Yeah.
Oh, that's because what's their face? The Rose Bowl's always got to get their shot of the sun going down in the third quarter.
Right.
Don't forget the mountains over in Pasadena. God, I hate that. Like, it's a beautiful shot, don't get me wrong, but I hate how like anal they are about that. Like, it's got to happen this day, this
Yeah.
day, this time. But
I'm gonna take Ohio State.
I am too.
I know I've kind of the last couple weeks been critical of like, yeah, it's the best team on paper, but it's not the best team. And I know you've been the Buckeye guy the whole year, but I am very blinded by what happened on last Saturday. And it's hard to beat very good teams twice. And I just think they're going to have a little magic, and they got a little chip on their shoulder that they never really have had to have in the past, the way the last couple years have gone. And I think it's going to lead them to a national championship, at least making the national championship. I don't know if Ryan Day has winning it all in his.
Yeah, I think on the flip side, this being a neutral site game, and honestly, I would assume that Ohio State travels better than Oregon, even with the geographical disadvantage of Oregon versus Pasadena, and then the state of Ohio versus Pasadena. Ohio State's fan base, in my opinion, is much larger, and I would expect that to be a 60-40 red crowd.
I'd
I'm
agree.
sure the pictures will show if I'm right or wrong, but that's it for me. Notre Dame, Georgia.
Yeah, another fun one. Georgia, 2-point favorite right now. I think Notre Dame proved that you have to count this game as a real matchup. And like you said, without Carson Beck, it's who's going to win. I unfortunately think Georgia's going to win this game. I just think they'll be too. I hate saying the trenches. It's been our favorite word of this podcast, but I just think. And as impressive as they looked against Indiana in the trenches, and I know this isn't the same Georgia team as the past maybe 3 or 4 seasons, it's a different animal than Indiana as far as the trenches. And I just think, well, I think they'll be competitive. I actually think Georgia's going to win this game by more than one score.
Yeah, I agree with that one as well. I think obviously Carson Beck losing makes this a closer point spread, but Notre Dame has not seen a team like this. Texas A&M in week one was cool. I think that's probably the best team they've played since then.
And they only scored like what? I think that game was like 17-10, 20 to
I don't
13.
recall how long ago that was, but what I was gonna say is Riley Leonard has gotten better stats wise the last month and a half of the season, but it's easy to put up stats against USC and UCLA and Stanford and who in the service academies. It's a lot easier to do that. And then you look at this Georgia team, who, by the way, the Georgia team playing without a quarterback, it's not going to be their first rodeo. They won an SEC title doing so when Carson Beck
Yep.
went down and they came in with this, his name already eludes me, but this is not a kind of this is this will not be Georgia's first, again, won't be their first rodeo of playing this way. So I also give them the edge.
It's also like you mentioned the first rodeo with this roster. It's not Kirby Smart's first rodeo here. It is Marcus Freeman's. That's going to be a factor as well.
True. I feel like Kirby always has a couple aces up his sleeve in terms of like trick plays and fake punts and big moments. So I think he might be able to catch Notre Dame napping with one and steal a possession, if you will.
Yeah, so I guess picks. I'm gonna go Penn State, and I'm gonna have Penn State covering the 11 number. Texas will cover 14. I'm actually gonna have everybody covering and all the favorites. I know Ohio State being the betting favorite is odd, but they're gonna cover 2.5, and Georgia will cover 2.
I agree with you completely. I think the Oregon OSU game might maybe turn into like a field goal at the end, tie game, boom, win by three. Yeah, another kind of boring week of us picking all favorites, but with the way that
I
with the
tried
way
last week and it didn't work out, Indiana.
that yeah, is what it is. I guess I kind of the last thing I potentially would have said is like maybe we should reseed after the first round because having Texas play Arizona State while Oregon is an underdog being the one seed because they were given Ohio State or they were rewarded with Ohio State, that's crazy to me.
Yeah. I think if anything had shown that, I like. And I'm still a proponent of this 12 expanded playoff. It needs to be reformatted in some capacity to not result in this. Whether that could be going down to 8, that could be even going up to 16, or not just giving byes to the actual best 4 ranked teams.
Yes.
I don't know. All of them probably better options than what this year has been.
All right, to the professionals.
To the professionals, we'll start like we always do. Lions 34, Bears 17. I'm going to call this one the JMO game.
Yeah.
Taunting, media coverage. I believe he got in trouble again before the game for something.
He got another taunting flag because he spun the
Right.
ball, which was
Right.
stupid, but he didn't do anything.
Yeah. And then he obviously goes off for over 100 yards, has the big touchdown. I mean, the offense is still firing this game. It actually kind of remind it was refreshing because it kind of reminded me of the Thanksgiving game against the Bears in the first half, in that you were able to move the ball at will and the Bears couldn't really at all, and you had to settle for a couple early field goals to where, the game was a little more in line than it could have been in the first half. And then instead of the Bears offense kind of coming alive, and instead of making it a game and forgetting how to score on offense, the offense this time was able to continue to move the ball in the second half and make sure that this was never really a competitive game.
Yeah, another clinic. You had Ben Johnson running fake stumble plays. I don't know if you saw
Yeah.
that. That's
Yeah.
I've never seen that before in my life. But when Ben Johnson got up, well, like 2 months ago, and people were like, "Ben, is it a bad thing that you're putting all these plays out on tape now?" He's like, "Oh, trust me, the well runs deep. If we're running fake stumbles, I can't imagine how deep that well is."
So I heard something. I watched a video of one of the ESPN guys on X saying X. I just called it X. Dang
It's
it,
Twitter.
Twitter. Saying that because it was like the game was. It was already like I believe we were up by 14 at the time. That it was something to kind of put on tape for teams to like have to like. It's probably something you would never do in a real game. And why do it then is to make sure that other teams are on notice that it's on tape that we can do that. And so you have to prepare and be ready for that obscene play like that, even though we'll never use it in an actual moment that means anything. You have to still prepare for it.
Or what if we do use it in a moment that means
True.
Ben Johnson's a lunatic.
True.
I have no
I
idea what to.
love I, what makes him so good with this line with the Lions right now too is like the lunacy is like embraced because of Dan Campbell, and so like they both feed into each other so well, and that obviously Ben Johnson feels he has free rein to do whatever he wants because of the way Dan Campbell coaches and the aggressiveness with the which the Lions play, and it kind of goes back and forth. So I just love it. We'll see. This is a crazy take I have on Ben Johnson is we'll see. I think the jury is still very much out on if he will be a good head coach. But I don't know. He's not going to be a Detroit Lion next season. We'll just say that.
I guess we got some help from the Commanders. They beat the Eagles.
Crazy.
Not much has changed on the Minnesota front, though. They just keep rolling, keep winning games. But I think with this Philadelphia Eagles loss, it kind of makes this upcoming week for us against San Francisco kind of like a freebie. You can lose it and it doesn't change anything as long as you win in week 18. So got a little bit more leeway there than everything that's going on. But there's that. I don't have anything else Lions related, just a couple other quick stories around the league.
Yeah, no, I'm good on the Lions.
All
Who
right. Some quick stories. The Raiders win a meaningless game against Jacksonville and have ceded control of the number one pick to the Giants.
Hell yeah.
Jonathan Taylor turns back the clock. Just a
Yep.
mammoth performance against Tennessee.
200 yards.
Yeah, the 49ers are in free fall. They've lost 5 of 6. They're mathematically out of the playoff, and hopefully they kind of go into their little quit mode and they give us a little free win.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens there.
Something on the 49ers. Do you see Moody missed another short
Yep.
field goal? And did
Yeah,
you see
he's
the
not going to
reaction?
be kicking for him
He's
next
not
year.
going to be kicking for the 49ers next year. I think that's abundantly clear.
I haven't looked at like clinching scenarios, but it appears that the NFC West is going to go down to a week 18 game, winner take all between the Rams and the Seahawks. So that'll be
Yeah.
fun.
Yeah, that was a great the Seahawks Vikings, and I always said they keep rolling. That was a great back and
It
forth.
was beautiful. That late touchdown to Justin Jefferson killed my fantasy season. I'll get more about that later when I talk about one team. But the arrival of JSN, he's kind of become the wide
Yes.
receiver one in Seattle. I'm very proud of that as a JSN truther going all the way back to 2021. Seeing this finally happen at the NFL stage on Sundays is great for me. Love to watch it. The Buccaneers, I think I'm going to mention them because they waste another Baker Mayfield magic moment and lose to the Cowboys. They lose control of the NFC South as Atlanta has the tiebreak. And speaking of Baker specifically, and you watch him play, I think he's kind of becoming a fan favorite across like all of America, where if you're not a Texas Longhorn slash NFC South fan, you love Baker Mayfield. You love the way he plays. You love the redemption story of getting discarded in Cleveland and getting to kind of just deal with shit in Carolina and LA and then sent to or signs with the Buccaneers on basically just a prove it deal and saves his career pretty much. I think he's been awesome. Very, very fun story.
I'm going to add one more state that probably hates him, and that's the state of Ohio, given the
Yes,
flag
you're
planting
right.
and
You
the
are
fact that
correct.
he couldn't do it for the Browns.
Yeah, that's very valid. But on the flip side, the last, I guess, true team I want to talk about, and this is slightly personal on a couple of fronts for me, the Arizona Cardinals. Cardinal once again. The classic late season collapse, which became synonymous with Cliff Kingsbury, seems to have transcended Cliff Kingsbury and just be an Arizona thing. In a do or die game against lowly Carolina, I don't care if Carolina's playing better now that Bryce Young came back from his benching. It's still Carolina. They still have no negative talent, and everything's in front of you if you're Arizona. You beat Carolina, you have a game against the Rams, and then you have a game against the 49ers. You could have gone 3-0 and won your division, but no, you go out there, you lay an absolute egg. You lose a turnover battle by two, the second of which is an egregious throw by Kyler Murray, just dumping the ball off. He looks like he's completely unraveled the last like 3 weeks. I think this is 3 weeks in a row where I've said egregious throw, Kyler Murray, moronic lobotomization, or some combination of those catchphrases. He's losing his mind. You have, this is where it gets personal for me, Marvin Harrison Jr. You drafted a wide receiver at number 4 overall in the draft, and you spend an entire season using him as a decoy running go routes so that you can forward your running game. Like, I don't understand that. Like, I do agree that part of it, I think, is his problem. His effort, especially on running plays, is abysmal. He doesn't care about blocking. He goes out there and I don't want to say tips plays off, but like you can tell when there's a run play just by watching him because he just kind of starts walking out of his break, doesn't really try or doesn't sell anything. And that's an issue for somebody who's supposed to have this gargantuan work ethic that he does, Mr. Jugs Machine himself. But I don't know what we're doing there. You drafted a guy at number 4 overall and you use him like Gabe Davis. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Like,
And then on
I
the
guess
other,
I'm, and I know you have the personal with Marvin
well, I have one
Harrison.
more personal thing. I'm sorry. I don't want to cut you off, but and
No.
then in overtime, these dickheads let Chuba Hubbard go nuclear. I think he had like 15 fantasy points just in overtime, and that killed me in my semifinal.
I guess I don't get as raged about the Cardinals because, like, I didn't really have any expectations for them. It just almost, this, like, collapse is just, to me, felt like them going to the mean of what I thought they'd be, which
Yeah.
is like maybe like which was like a 6 to 8 win team, and that's what they're going to finish as.
Yeah, like I said, I just ha I do have the personal gripe as the Marvin Harrison dynasty owner, and then obviously Chuba Hubbard just torpedoing my chances of fantasy. But
So,
that's how.
but the Panthers, let's just talk about the Panthers.
Sure.
What do you like? And I know. Is it enough that like you're gung ho Bryce Young's the guy next season, run it back, like what he's done down the stretch here?
Yeah, I think Dave Canales for a third year in a row is showing himself to be the QB whisperer. He did it with Geno, did it with Baker, and now I think he's doing it with Bryce Young, where he's playing very, very well. Like we talk about Carolina not having talent. I mean, he's throwing, I think he was throwing that game to corpse Adam Thielen, undrafted rookie Jalen Coker, and then some 28-year-old journeyman David Moore. I think those were his weapons. Behind a bad offensive line, the defense has nobody. So I
Their
do think
number, yeah,
what?
their number one receiver. I'm sorry to cut you off now. It's like their number one receiver going into the year was Diontae Johnson, who's not even on an NFL roster anymore.
He actually is. He got claimed by the Texans because they
Okay, there you
lost Tank
go.
Dell again.
There you go.
But yeah, it's a tough scene for kind of the talent surrounding Bryce. And the other thing is, I think with these wins, I think they've now got 4 wins. I mean, they've played their way out of like the QB sweepstakes. Like you're not getting
Right.
Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders. And what are you going to go do? Sign Kirk Cousins? Yeah, I'm sure that'll go great.
Yeah.
So I do think that Bryce Young is kind of God, I can't believe I'm having a stroke. He has placed himself as the franchise quarterback for 2025.
Yeah, it's kind of like a we'll wait and see, in that like they were in such like Alcatraz basically that now they're just in normal prison, and it's like you're still a long ways from being a free man.
Yeah. The last thing that I have, and maybe this is slightly premature, but I feel like we've got almost an entire season worth of kind of watching these people. I want to talk about the rookie quarterbacks, like the entire class.
Yeah.
Obviously, JJ McCarthy got his medical redshirt with the knee injury, so he will be omitted from this. But I think everyone in that class that was drafted has shown flashes. Caleb behind a bad offensive line and a terrible coaching situation has shown flashes, albeit he's also done some boneheaded things.
Yeah.
Jaden Daniels lit the league on fire for the first month and a half, then went through a month and a half slump, and now he's playing better again. He's been great. Drake May got thrown into probably the worst situation out of any of them in terms of talent and just people around him. He's shown flashes throwing to nobodies. And then you've got Bo Nix, who's probably been the best of all of them. He's probably your rookie of the year alongside Brock Bowers.
Right.
Michael Penix gets into the game for the first time as a starter. He didn't have to do anything because the Giants beat themselves with two pick sixes, but he looked all right. He looked poised. He did what he needed to do. He had an interception that wasn't actually his fault. Kyle Pitts, the human bust machine himself, just juggled the ball and then jogged off the field like nothing was wrong. But clearly Atlanta likes Michael Penix enough to bench Kirk Cousins, and not just bench. They've pretty much said, we're cutting you. So they
Right.
gave a guy $100 million guaranteed and then cut him 15 weeks into the season. So clearly all of these guys have done enough to warrant the franchise feeling good about themselves. And I think if you had to ask him hindsight 2020, if you knew what you know now, would you still make the pick? I think every single one of those franchises says yes. And that's kind of impressive given the bust rate of quarterbacks. And obviously, this is not a predictor of future success. It's 1 year, the teams will get tape on these guys. But I think it is rare to have five guys go in the first or six guys go in the first round. And of the five that have played, all five, the teams are happy with what they're seeing.
Right. That was a great description of all five guys. I want to kind of throw out the topic of the playoff race moving forward. And
Absolutely.
it's something I've been prevalent and kept reinforcing on how bad, like you're either really bad or really good this year, and it's really made for some kind of I guess negative outlooks for the NFL, and that can be seen in the playoff picture. The NFC, aside from the NFC West, aside from the two like crap division races, is already decided essentially.
Yeah.
And then the AFC, I know you've got like the Bengals, the Dolphins, I'm forgetting one other team that need
Colts.
the who?
The Colts.
The Colts, right? That kind of need an implosion by I'm almost called them San Diego, by LA and or the Broncos. In that they would have to lose both games and the other teams would have to win them. There's really no, I don't know. It's to me, there's not the same kind of like, we're not going to get the down the stretch week 18. Let's scoreboard watching that we may have gotten in years past.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's, like you said, there's going to be two kind of clincher games in the NFC West and the NFC North in terms of who wants to be a one seed and who wants to be a five seed, and then who wants to play for another week and who doesn't. But you're right. There is nothing. The NFC in particular is kind of crazy. You've got
Yeah.
obviously Minnesota and Green Bay who just don't lose. Like, we're 13-2. Minnesota's tied with us on record, and Green Bay's only behind by two games. That's
Yeah.
insane. And then you look down and Washington's got 10 wins too. It's
Right.
incredible what these teams have done.
Yeah, talk about like the Packers. Oh, the 14.5, it was the second highest spread of the season to the Detroit and Jacksonville. And oh my gosh, that was a game like I didn't have any interest in turning on, and you could have just watched the scorecast and gone, okay, good night. Like, holy crap. It was the first shutout of the season in the NFL.
Yep. So yeah, I think this is you've been on this for a month and a half where this season's just kind of been a wash where so many teams have just actively packed it in and you're left with three teams all competing against each other for the final division spot and there's not really a wild card race.
Well, it's like it can even be seen in the Lions' schedule is that like we came into this year being, oh my God, first place schedule, it's going to be so hard. Has it really been? Like, I know the Lions are a Super Bowl favorite and one of the best teams in the league, but they've played so many uncompetitive games against bad teams this year.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of just showed up and kicked the shit out of the NFC South or AFC South. We've kind of held our own in the division games, obviously. And yeah, Arizona, the
Yeah, that was,
Rams, Seattle, the 49ers. I mean, we're talking about people actively quitting, so probably going to do a. So yeah, I agree.
But that's kind of what anything else you can add here to end the show, but that's kind of what I wanted to end on
No,
NFL
I
world.
think that's a perfect way to end on it. So, from myself to everyone who's made it this far, thank you very much. Really appreciate you. Happy holidays. And I will leave everyone off with a Go Lions.
Go Lions, baby.